have been dealing with these three sutras, that is Samadhibada, first chapter, 12th, 13th and 14th, they are all interrelated sutras. It's a very important discussion from the practical point of view of everyday life. The 12th sutra explains how to restrain vrittis. Vrittis here should be understood as certain natural tendencies that prompt us to act, to speak, or to think, and or to live in a given fashion. So in a way, we are all caught in this trap of vrittis. So, I mentioned this earlier, the most visible manifestation of the power of vrittis or accumulated tendencies can be found in the conflict between what we actually want to do and what we end up doing. What our mind allows us to do and what we actually want to do. If we can actually do what we really want to do, then many of the problems we face in life can be eliminated. But it doesn't happen that way. So that's called this trap or stranglehold of vrittis, impressions. In a way, this is also the problem of fighting the lower self of our personality. So, Patanjali described five types of vrittis that we already explained. That is pramana, viparya, vikalpa, nidra, smritaya. Vrittis related to our normal cognition of objects. Direct perception, seeing, or inference, or comparison. Of course, when we talk about pramana, is one of the vrittis, the word pramana is the Sanskrit equivalent of the epistemological tool of knowledge, pramana, valid knowledge, the tool for valid knowledge, proper understanding. Patanjali or the yoga philosophers take a very simplistic view of epistemology. So those who are eager to go deeper into Indian philosophical systems will be interested in this. It's a very elaborate science. Epistemology is a very important science in Indian philosophy. Among certain philosophers, like the Indian materialists, they accept only one pramana, one tool for valid knowledge, which they called direct perception. Not in the sense that we see with our eyes, rather anything that we directly come to know is the only tool of knowledge, instrument of knowledge, according to Indian materialists, like Charvaka is called. Modern scientists, or there is a school of philosophers, more or less they follow the scientific tradition. It's called their accidentalist, is called the school of accidentalism. So you don't go into antecedents of anything. It's a very interesting subject, which I won't go into details, not a very appealing thing, but it's very important to understand. Direct perception, comparison, then inference, verbal testimony, presumption, and absence. These are six tools of knowledge normally understood or recognized in Indian theistic systems of philosophy. It's called Pratyaksha, Anumana, Upamana, Shabda, Arthapatti, Anupalabdhi, are four, the six schools. And one unique characteristic of Indian epistemology is that that even accepts the absence of knowledge or absence of presence of something as a tool for knowledge, which Aristotle or Greek philosophers did not accept. So you come to know of the absence of something. Knowledge of the absence of something is also a knowledge. So that is a special school. Then Parishesha, Sambhava, Aitihya, all these are additional schools of knowledge. So Parishesha is nothing but the method of exclusion. So the old Indian philosophers give a funny example. Suppose in a meeting there are 10 people, and somebody had kept a huge box on the top layer of a shelf. And suppose you are going to a classroom, there are 10 students, and you find one mischievous student has kept a huge box on the top layer of a shelf. And you observe the students, one fellow is quite hefty, well built, more than 6 feet. So through exclusion, you can come to a conclusion. You can exclude other 9 and narrow down upon the remaining person as the culprit who is responsible for this. In fact, this was a method used by Sherlock Holmes, exclusion. Something very funny. Sherlock Holmes was a modern exponent of this Parishesha. It's called doctrine of exclusion. So, the Sambhava means some kind of events that you heard but you are not sure. Aitihya means hearsay. So there are different tools of knowledge. So that kind of knowledge also creates a vritti, an impression. Most of us are living under the trap of, or under the stranglehold of vrittis or tendencies that we have done deliberately with full awareness at the empirical level. We do certain things and our actions produce a result. The result may be positive or negative, and if the results are negative, then we will have a tendency to avoid that action. If they're positive, you have a tendency to repeat it. So it is a natural habit. Then pramana viparyaya vikalpa nidra smrudeha. Vikalpa and viparyaya are more or less related. One is just a word without a corresponding objective reality. The other one is false notion. Nidra is a deep sleep state. Deep sleep state, or of course in the Patanjali system, it also includes dream state. Patanjali does not, the commentators like Vyasa and others, do not make a distinction between dream state and deep sleep state. So what you dream about, what you see or experience in dream, will have a residual effect or impact on our character. So that also creates a vritti, a residual effect. And smriti, when we remember certain things, we relive those experiences, then what happens? Those impressions get reinforced, strengthened. What we remember again and again, recollect again and again, those memories get reinforced. Now, how to get out of negative vrittis, the trap or stranglehold of vrittis? That's a main topic in these 3-4 month sutras, which is a very famous part of Patanjali's system. Of the 195 sutras, they are among the most well-known and most relevant. Abhyasa vairagya abhyam tannirodha. So how to start a new chapter in our life? There are bad habits, bad memories, bad ideas. On the one hand, they emerge and we are helpless. On the other hand, we are also aware of the fact that they are not good ones. They should be avoided. So we want to avoid them. And this these vrittis can manifest in the form of instinctive habits or tendencies, conscious actions, or conscious repetition of tendencies, actions. Sometimes it could be also in the form of obsessions and phobias, irrational fear, or certain obsessive habits that we know are not supported by reason, still we cannot get out of it. So as I mentioned, Patanjali recommends two methods, Abhyasa and Vairagya. The most important element is here, dispassion. Dispassion means, well, from a literary point of view, it means the lack of passion, lack of attachment. Mentally detaching ourselves from any involvement of actions prompted by those tendencies is what is meant by detachment or vairagya here. Of course, this is an important subject that is going to be discussed in the coming sutras. And this should be practiced again and again, detachment. Detachment means mentally taking ourselves away from any kind of involvement. Looking upon ourselves as a witness. We should not fight wrong habits, wrong ideas, wrong tendencies that emerge in our mind. Because fighting also, quarreling with these negative tendencies, also will connect us to those tendencies. You cannot fight with someone unless you go near him, and that is dangerous. And you cannot go close to those habits. You cannot befriend and you cannot antagonize. Both will have the equal effect in terms of getting trapped into negative tendencies or impressions. So what to do? Keep ourselves away from it by remaining witness. When we keep ourselves away, we remain disconnected with those habits, those tendencies, which again take the form of habits and actions or words or tendencies that we actually do not want, do not like, want to get out of, but still helpless. So there is another sutra which is related to this. In Patanjali system, traditionally many of the sutras are studied in clusters. You don't go from sutra 1, 2, 3, that's not the way Patanjali system was traditionally taught. It is science, you know. So you have to do reference. This sutra is related to the 33rd sutra of the same chapter, where the science of detachment is explained. Maitri karuna mudida upekshanam sukha dukkha punya apunya visayanam bhavanataha chitta prasadana. So how to attain mental balance and tranquility? The method is mentioned here. How to first of all restrain our tendencies and vrittis, and how to live with people with tendencies and vrittis that we do not want, we do not like, we want to get out of. That's a big problem. So Patanjali here recommends four important methods. Maitri, Karuna, Mudita, Upeksha. So those whom you respect sincerely, you know, we sincerely respect those when we want to be like them. So a child respects sportsmen, and a child may want to be like the sportsman. So what you admire in others, you want to be like that. So when you find people who are spiritually enlightened, you should not be jealous, you should not be hostile, you should be friendly with them. Because when we befriend people with certain qualities, you inherit, you acquire those qualities. That's what really happens. What we sincerely admire in others, those qualities we are likely to develop in our own personality. And what we hate in others, we are likely to avoid. So those who are advanced in spiritual life, in yoga practice, you should be friendly, you should have admiration for those people. So if a person wants to practice spiritual life, the easiest, the surest, and the most simple method is to live in the company of fellow spiritual seekers. And if possible, seek the company of those who are superior to us, more advanced than us, and not those who are inferior to us. So that's why Maitri is one attitude, friendship. How to interact and live in a world inhabited by people of different types, those who are spiritual seekers and also those who are not spiritually inclined. So how to live without friction or conflict? It's a very interesting analysis. So friendship towards those to fellow spiritual seekers. Then there are those who are less advanced than you, but who want to live a spiritual life. You should have sympathy. You should not look upon them as inferior. If you do that, then we go down. If you become jealous of those who are more advanced than us, we go down. That's your Maitri. And if you look down upon those who are not as advanced as us, then also we go down. Mudita ubekshana. Mudita means you should admit, you should appreciate with joy, with happiness. We must appreciate those who are highly advanced, who are meritorious, who are spiritually, who are fellow spiritual seekers like us. They are also sincerely struggling. And then upeksha. Upeksha means indifference. It is the opposite of both. Neither hostility or antagonism, not too much of intimacy with people whose association may indirectly take you away from your own spiritual path. Those who create doubts in our mind about our chosen path. Those who create conflicts in our mind in what we believe in. So, such people you should not befriend. That is dangerous, obviously. We should not antagonize either, because that also will, as I mentioned earlier, will connect us to them. So any kind of connection is risky. So indifference. So that's called upeksha. So this detachment is upeksha, or remaining in a state of witness, completely disconnected or detached from what is not appropriate. So through this repeated practice, what happens? We advance in spiritual life. So in that context, we already discussed elaborately in the last few classes how the mind is compared to a river by Vyasa. This river of mind flows in both positive direction, also negative direction. Chittanati nama ubhayatapo vahini vakati kalyanaya vakati papayacha. Mind flows in both directions. Positive direction, negative direction. If you practice indifference, upeksha, or detachment from wrong internal vrittis, habits, tendencies, and also from undesirable associations outside, then mind starts flowing in the positive direction. How do we realize, or how do we detect the fact that our mind is moving in the right direction? So the commentators on Patanjali Yoga Sutras give one very interesting, use one word, chitta prasadhanam is a term used. Let's see, that's what is find here, Maitri karuna mudita upekshanam sukha dukkha punya apunya vishayanam bhavanataha chitta prasadhanam. What is chitta prasadhanam? The English translation is very simple. Inner mental tranquility. But it is much more than what the word tranquility can imply. Tranquility is one main component of this experience. When we do something, when we practice something, if you feel a kind of inner contentment with full tranquility, a kind of inner blessedness, and a feeling, this is my right track. A sincere spiritual seeker, an honest, sincere spiritual seeker, if he reads a book or if he prays once and meditates, the first sign is that he feels a kind of inner completeness. He feels a fraction of this chitta prasadhanam. Chitta prasadhanam is a combination of a feeling of inner contentment. It is not momentary satisfaction that you bought a new car, you get happy. The car may break down tomorrow, something else happens. So it is not momentary, something that is changeable. Something which is sustaining, which is everlasting. And you feel a kind of inner completeness, inner perfection, inner blessedness, tranquility, and kind of inner restfulness. So that's what happens when we spiritually advance. That's a right sign that tells us where we are on the right track. So this should be repeated, this practice. So the 13th sutra says, tatrasthido yatnaha. What is abhyasa? So the 12th sutra says repetition of detachment. This, or what do you call this kind of witness attitude? You have to remember this witness meditation is rooted in the yoga system, because the Buddhists, many of the commentators of yoga philosophy were Buddhists. Vijnana Bhikshu was a Buddhist. So he is one of the greatest commentators of this tradition. So Yoga Bhasha Vartigam is Vijnana Bhikshu's book. And one of the two idealistic schools of Buddhism, later Buddhism, is called Yogacara. So Yogacara means the practice of yoga. That's the meaning of the word. It's a school of subjective idealism. The other one was Shunyavada, doctrine of emptiness. So this practice of looking upon ourselves as witness through vairagya, detachment, and this repeated practice that is recommended here, 13th sutra says, tatra sthidau yatnaka, remaining there. So, there is a particular sthidau, it is called nimitta saptami. It is one particular, saptami brings seventh case ending, has got different forms, and this is called nimitta saptami. That means remaining there without a change in that state. I mean, fully being established in that state of practicing detachment. You should work hard. You should strain yourself. That is called abhyasa, or repetition. I have dealt with this sutra earlier. And then, because these are all interrelated, before we go to the 15th sutra, recapitulation is necessary. That's why. Now, the 14th sutra is Satu Dirghakala Nairandarya Satkara Asevido Dridhabhumi. Now, what is this? What happens then? So, this repetition I mentioned earlier, but it's very important because there are a few more things that we have to discuss now, which we left out in last class, because suddenly the class came to an end. Satu Dirghakala. So, you should be able to practice for a long time. Now, if you want to practice something for a long time without feeling tired or bored or exhausted, then there is one important quality necessary. You should love that particular what you are practicing. You should have respect for that. If you don't like something and if you try to practice it, then you can't practice it for a very long time. So it's very important that you should be able to practice for a long time. Dirghakala means for a long time. And to be able to practice for a long time, you should feel happy when you are practicing it. You should love what you are practicing. If a person develops the ability to enjoy spiritual practice, then spiritual practice becomes, or it comes naturally to him. If there is something that you can see that is a big strain for you, that requires effort, it's called yatna. So ayatna is one of the characteristics of this. Ayatna means effortlessness, total effortlessness. When you put up a great effort, that means you are not very perfect. So people who work very hard to write a story, nobody will be willing to read that story. A great poet, and if he works very hard with bulging muscles, if he writes a poem, nobody will consider that poem worth reading. That's why one of the greatest literary classics, poems, or even creative writings, novels, they were written when nature caught hold of that writer and forced him to write it. So Dostoevsky was fully drunk and he wrote Brothers of Karamazov. He himself perhaps didn't read it. He didn't know what he was writing. Became marvelous classic, the greatest novel the world has ever produced. A great poet. So according to Hindu tradition, goddess Saraswati catches hold of him and tries to manifest her wisdom through that poet. Then only a poet is able to write a great poetry. So that's the idea. Anyway, coming down to empirical plane, we can say wisdom will catch hold of you, and that wisdom expresses through you, then you write a great classic. So effortlessness is one important component of perfection in any area. And if you want to practice for a long time, then you should not feel strained. You should not feel exhausted. So one should develop the ability to enjoy reading spiritual classics. The ability to enjoy prayer, meditation, japa, or anything. Whatever you enjoy, really speaking, that is what you are fit for. And whatever you do without any effort on your part, as a natural expression of tendency, instinctive tendency, that's what you are actually fit for. So Patanjali says, it should be done for a long time. It should be satkara sevita. Satkara means you should have reverence, respect, a sense of sanctity, love and admiration for practice of yoga, for practice of detachment. It should become an effortless. So ayatna lelida asevida, one of the commentators says. It will be simple, natural, spontaneous, and also effortless. And then only you can do it without any break. The nairandarya means without any break, continuous succession. Not like the flow of water, but like a flow of oil. That's what. The flow oil is thicker, there is no gap. So, sadu dirghakala nairendari asevidu tudapumi. So, when we practice for a long time, uninterruptedly, at the devotion, then this reputation becomes well established. Of course, you have to remember, there is one cultural problem here in actual practice. If you look upon life as one chance, and everything including yoga to be practiced and mastered at one go in this life, then it is not possible. According to yoga and Vedanta, life cycle continues. So if you practice and travel some distance in your spiritual journey in this life, and it may happen that people may not succeed before they die, nothing will be lost. All the practices will be accumulated as a spiritual capital in our account, and will continue the same spiritual practice in the next life, which is what we discussed last time. So that's an important point. The sixth chapter of Gita, when Arjuna asked the question as to what happens to people who do practice for some time and then pass out before attaining the supreme goal, Krishna tells, you are never late and nothing will be lost. Not that you should have complacency, but whatever little you practice, you will inherit it when you are born again. And Krishna tells very interesting, tatratam buddhisam yogam labhade pauro dekhikam yatateja tado bhuya samsiddhu kurunantana, as in 6th chapter. So when you are born again, this mind, intellect, buddhi, samskara, subtle personality, it brings with you, you inherit a baggage, your own spiritual capital that you accumulated in previous life. And you continue your journey. From that point, you continue your journey again. So Gita gives some additional information in this context. It says, if a person has practiced a lot of prayer, meditation, but still retains some interest in enjoying worldly comforts. Well, if only I could get a lottery, or if only I could have $1 billion. Well, if a spiritual seeker who has done a lot of prayer, meditation, all that, but this desire has not come to an end, and if that person passes away, Gita says that person will be born in the family of a rich person, so that he will continue to be able to enjoy all his unfulfilled desires. But the spiritual practice that he has done in this life will not be lost. He will inherit all the good spiritual practices he has done in this life, and he will continue his journey from that point, and he will also get an opportunity to fulfill his unfulfilled desires. Srutinam simatam geke yoga bhrashto bhijayate, Gita says. So they'll be born in a family, prosperous family, at the same time virtuous family, so that he'll be able to continue. He'll encourage spiritual qualities from his parents. Be born in a family or a culture, a tradition where he'll be naturally be inclined to practice yoga, meditation. At the same time, yes, some unfulfilled desires from previous life, that should be fulfilled. So he will be born in a prosperous family. That's one stage. What about those who are still more advanced? They'll be born in a family where the parents are themselves great spiritual seekers, where you'll be naturally inclined to continue your spiritual practices. By instinct, those who are born in higher, those who already practice a lot of detachment and renunciation in this life. So that's why it is said, life is not one chance. So one should be able to take this life seriously and should keep in mind we should practice for a long time and without a break. The Nairandarya means succession. If there's a break, I mentioned last time the story of Jadabharata, you know, the great king who left his family, his kingdom, his palace. Suddenly at the time of death, somehow his mind was taken away from higher spiritual ideas. He was thinking about how to protect these animals. So he was born as a deer in next life, the little deer. But then he lived as a deer, but he was still fully aware of what happened to him in his previous life. There is a great king, Bharata, who left his kingdom and palace, went to a hermit. He started built a hermitage on the banks of the river and did tapasya there for a long time. He didn't forget it. He didn't lose it. It was still there with him. So the deer remained within the compound of the hermitage. He didn't go out. And when his life came to an end, he was born as a great saint. So the king was born as a deer, and the deer was born as a great saint. So that's why he said for a long time, without a break, in continuous succession, and again that is possible only when we attach a kind of sanctity to what we do. So this is a very important component. Attaching an attitude of sanctity to what we do, it helps us to conserve our energy and focus our mental concentration on what we do. If we do something, this is something sacred. If we attach a kind of sanctity to yoga, then only one gets established in this. This also we discussed, but some of the ideas left unexplained in the last class have been completed. Now we are going to the 15th sutra, which deals with the first stage in the development of this higher detachment. The sutra is Drishta Anusavika Vishaya Vidrishnasya Vasikara Samnya Vairagyam. So, what is this this detachment, this renunciation, this total detachment? Of course, it is called, technically in Sanskrit, it is called Apara Vairagyam, the first stage in developing this detachment. Detachment is a very handy tool in our hands if we can practice it. So if you read Yoga Sutra lectures, you find this is done in a very mighty, big, pompous Sanskrit language. But in our ordinary everyday life, if we practice this, it can take a lot of burden off all our shoulders. See, for example, setbacks, tragedies, unpleasant events or happenings in social life or family life. After all, according to yoga tradition, you know, you are born in this family to which you belong in this life. After being born in so many families, so many times in the past, and maybe you are going to be born in so many other families in future. So what is this particular family, this connection? It doesn't mean that we should be hostile, we should be cold, or it's not a life negating or world negating philosophy. But it's a wonderful antidote, a medicine for many of the problems which are rooted in too much of obsessive attachment. So remember, attachment with a spiritual perspective is wonderful. There is a beauty and charm about it. But same attachment can become very painful, very tragic, and cause a lot of sleepless nights. So at the ordinary empirical worldly level, even this value of attachment, value of freedom from attachment, or the practice of detachment, has got a great value. I should repeat again, the word detachment doesn't imply any kind of world-negating or life-denying, life-negating ideal. It is a positive and healthy spiritual tool that we use, that we have got in our hands, to look at life as a whole with wisdom from a higher perspective. That's what is meant by vairagyam, or here is it called, that's Sanskrit word is vairagyam. So there are two sutras here, the 15th and 16th. The 15th sutra that we are going to discuss right now deals with the secondary detachment. Means it is the first stage. It means first stage, primary stage. In the coming sutra, 16th sutra, there is a definition of detachment of a much more supreme, much more exalted type. So the sutra is the dispassion of the person in a spiritual seeker in whom the desire for earthly comforts or heavenly comforts has completely ceased is called Vasikara. That particular dispassion or detachment is called Vasikara. Dispassion is the name, the method is detachment. Detachment is the method, dispassion is the ideal, the goal. Now, so the desire for earthly comforts and the desire for heavenly comforts, so they call drishta means earthly, empirical. Anusaviga means you have, if you read the scriptures, you find if you do this, then you will go to heaven, you go. So again, I have to remember, when you read this Patanjali system, or even Vedanta books, when you read the word heaven, especially in Vedantic text and the Patanjali system, you should remember one important distinction between what heaven implies in yoga and what it means in Christian biblical literature. In Christian biblical literature, heaven has got a spiritual content in it. Heaven is the place where God Father lives. So heaven is a kingdom of heaven. There is a spiritual, divine aspect about it. But heaven, as the word is used in the yoga system, or even the Bhagavad Gita, or any of the mythological books of Hinduism, that heaven is, to use the most common American language, not a big deal, so to speak. That heaven is a place where you live for a long time with all luxury. Whatever you can get in a 5-star hotel, that's the place heaven is. So, that's why in civilizations and cultures, which are the origin in very hot countries, heaven is a place where the temperature is almost 17 degrees centigrade, not Fahrenheit, degree centigrade, where you get plenty of cool, ice-cool grape juice. And you lie down somewhere in a wonderful grassland, it falls into your mouth. You need not even lift lift a glass and drink it. This is the concept of heaven. And there is water everywhere. And also pleasant rains once a while. So Vivekananda says, suppose, you know, Chirapunji is in India, in northwestern, where the highest rainfall in the world, highest. If you tell them this is the heaven, they would rather go to hell, in fact. So heaven in Vedantic yoga tradition has got a very earthly meaning. There is nothing divine or spiritual about it. Heaven is a place that you have to transcend. So the desire to go to heaven is a stage that you have to outgrow. You have to go beyond that. Then only you become spiritually wise. So that statement you find in the yoga, Vedanta, Bhagavad Gita, other scriptures. But that's very important. Often, you know, I had to face this problem back in India when I was teaching the yoga students in international yoga institutes. So they asked, so then I had to explain, you know. So that's one thing. That's why it is anusaviga means even desire for going to some celestial abodes like heaven that you have read about or heard about in mythological books, theological books, other places you can go to heaven if you can enjoy. So one should not have any desire for anything earthly belonging to this world, money, wealth, status, position or anything, or any desire to go to some celestial abode after death. All these desires should be eliminated. Desire should be eliminated. In the next sutra, you have gone beyond this stage. There is no need for you to worry about the desire because they no longer exist. That is explained in the 16th sutra in maybe the next class. So the 15th and 16th sutra are interconnected. We will discuss that subject in the next class. Now before concluding, I shall read an announcement. We will not have class next Friday, May the 26th, because of preparations for a Memorial Day special program in Ulima. So the next class will be on Friday, June the 2nd at 7:30 p.m. here. So please remember, we have a very wonderful program in Ulima on Saturday, Sunday and Monday. Monday is the main program, the May Day. That is 29th May, Monday, and 27th and 28th. So these 3 days, Saturday, Sunday and Monday, May 27th, 28th and 29th, we have important programs in Ulima from morning till evening. So all of you are welcome to assemble in Ulima. Okay, so now we will have interaction, so we can.
Talking about liking or loving what you do is leads to effortlessness. Yeah. But a lot of times as beginner, you actually find it's very mechanical and the teachings say you have to just stick to it. But at the same time, in other place also it says that if you do mechanically, it doesn't have any result. Yeah. Can you just put them together?
Yeah, that's true. You know, often, you know, we had to get out of the present trap of repeated habits that we have developed. So that's why when we start at the beginning of spiritual life, there will be some jerks, some frictions, some kind of conflicts. So at that stage, mechanical practice is necessary. Just as kindergarten children should be forced to memorize their alphabets. So that's true. Depending upon our own evolution in spiritual life, there will be some conflicts when we break out of our existing patterns and habits and start a new set of practices. So at that time, what we must do, we should be mechanical, we have to be. And then we should practice japa, meditation, all this according in a very formal way. Formalism is necessary there. Formality is essential at that stage. But after some time, when we reinforce our practices by reading and also by associating with spiritually inclined people, that's very important for developing a liking for spiritual practices. So in order to develop a liking for spiritual life, it's very important, very crucial, we should practice and also we should associate with people who are practicing. That, you know, if you are moving with people who are spiritually inclined, you naturally develop a desire. Even if our mind doesn't cooperate, still association with people will have in the long run some real impact in our character. That's what happens. So mechanical practice is a necessary evil. It is not evil really speaking. You know, Sri Ramakrishna puts in a very simple language. So, you know, a small plant should be protected from wild animals. So you should erect a fence around it. Otherwise, you know, cattle will eat it up. But when it becomes a tree, you don't require this fence. So that's okay, then I would like to read some details of this program. It may be helpful to you. So, as I mentioned, the main programs are on 29th, that is Monday, May Day. But there are important programs on 27th and 28th. So on 27th, from 10:30 to 5:30, you find meditation and also talks by devotees like you. Spirituality in everyday life. It is not an academic discussion. Devotees sharing their ideas, how they came to spiritual life, how spiritual life helps them in taking care of their everyday responsibilities. So devotees will be speaking on the subject, spirituality in everyday life. There is one morning session from 10:30 to 12 o'clock and one afternoon session from 3 to 4:30 on Saturday. And Sunday there is only one session from 10:15 to 11:45. And on 29th, Monday, the Memorial Day, a program begins at 10 o'clock. And then from 10:30 to 12:45, there will be three presentations. The main theme is Women Saints of East and West. So there will be three papers. One on Saint Teresa of Avila, the Greek Carmelite reformer, and then Holy Mother Sri Sarada Devi, and on Sister Nivedita. So three papers. And then light lunch will be served to all those who participate. Normally we expect around 1,000, between 900 and 1,100, 1,200 participants. There will be meditation. Then from 1:45 to 4:15, there will be questions and answers. So those who listen to these three presentations can put questions to the speakers and they will respond to those questions. And the program comes to an end at 4:15 p.m. with a buffet dinner and informal meetings with the speakers. This is a program. So you're all most welcome. Our next Yoga Sutra class will be on June the 2nd, Friday, 7:30 p.m. Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Tat Sat Sri Ram Krishna Pranamastu.